a voice cries out in the darkness.
Help me.
They implore you. Unable to decline, you take up this side quest to explore...
Stardew Valley. So, welcome back, everyone. It's time for another side quest, and today we're going to talk about the best game I've ever played. Woohoo! Well, okay, maybe it's not the best game that I've ever played, but it is definitely, definitely the game that I am loving the most right now, and that's Stardew Valley. So, I recently got this game on the Switch, and this is a game that probably all of you are familiar with and perhaps even really know better than I do. This game came out several years ago now on Steam and PlayStation 4 and a lot of other consoles. And recently, the one thing that I've been waiting for, the thing that I've literally been waiting only for this, just to play this game, is the Japanese retail version of this, the actual physical copy released in Japan. It was 3,000 yen, which is like $30 roughly. And it comes with the soundtrack and a nice little cardboard box and all that good stuff. I was waiting for that to pick up this game because as much as I really, really wanted to play this game, I just knew that it needed to be the perfect situation for me. I knew that if it was going to be on like PlayStation 4, it wasn't going to hold my interest because of the whole, you know, console thing, sitting in front of the TV only and being tied to that. For a game like Stardew Valley, that's not going to work for me. And then I also thought, well, okay, I could get it on Switch, but, you know, that's a download. And a game like that, to me, it's so cool and collectible that I just want to have it physical. And I knew that there was a physical version of it coming, and I can't remember if there was an actual physical version for the US or not on Switch, but I did look up online and found out that there was one coming for the Japanese market, so I thought, well, I live here, might as well wait for it. And that's what I did. So, for the past couple weeks, I have been playing Stardew Valley on the Switch just nonstop. And I have to say that this is the game that I've been waiting for many, many years. And let's talk about why. First of all, I want to say that the music in this game really, really impressed me. And I found out recently that my friend Mike, who made the theme song for this podcast, also is a very big fan of the soundtrack for this game. And I didn't really understand why or even that he was a fan of it until I started listening to it and I was talking to him about it. And I thought, you know, this soundtrack is really good. And the quality of the sound is really good. You know, you've played other games where there's MIDI and it's kind of meh. A game that I'm just started playing recently called Reverie, which is a sort of a Zelda clone on Switch and PlayStation, PS, you know, Vita and that kind of thing. It's also uses MIDI, but the instrumentation and the actual MIDI effects processor that it uses are just not very good quality. And so it makes the whole sound, even though the composition is not bad, just sound really cheap and budget. Stardew Valley, on the other hand, is completely opposite. It uses a really high quality DAW, which, for people who don't know, it's just a sort of a soundscape that MIDIs use. I don't remember the exact word for it. It's like Direct Audio Workshop or something like that. But basically, it's the tools that you're using to get that sound. And this particular one is a really good quality one. And so that's what Mike uses. He actually said that he was inspired to buy this particular DAW and use it for his own music simply because of Stardew Valley, because that's what the developer used. So the music is great, and I'm so happy to have this soundtrack CD along with the game. But let's get into what makes the game so great. Okay, if for some reason you don't know anything about Stardew Valley, it's basically like Harvest Moon. Now, if you've ever played Harvest Moon, or now it's called Story of Seasons, but if you've ever played Harvest Moon, you know that it's a farming game. And you think, oh, farming, boy, that sounds fun. But there's something really, really addictive in this concept of building a farm with your own hands. And of course, it's digital, so they're not really your own hands, but it feels like it at times. You have control over what crops you're going to put in. You have a very clear end goal, you know, making your farm better. You have seasons. You have the planning you need to do. You know, you have to arrange your farm the way you want it. You get animals. You get chickens and cows and stuff like that. And so the game is constantly progressing and constantly giving you new things to work on and new goals. And that's what always made Harvest Moon great. That and the dating sim elements, which allowed you to, you know, fall in love with and marry one of the villagers. So this was a very simple concept when it first started out way back on the Super Nintendo. And I think a lot of people feel like the height of the series was the Nintendo 64 Harvest Moon. This is also called Bokujō Monogatari in Japanese, which literally means farm story. And so this series has seen sort of some ups and downs. And one of the things that developer has done is focused really heavily on the dating elements and turning the game into sort of a dating sim light and not paying enough attention to the farm elements that made the game great. The farm started to become sort of an afterthought, and the dating took first place, and there's all these, you know, lots of silly cutscenes and, you know, costumes and goofy stuff, which, while fun and great and cool looking, don't add enough to the core gameplay. Stardew Valley decided, let's get back to the basics of what made this core gameplay so fun in the first place. And I don't know very much about the developer or the, you know, the development cycle. I believe it's just kind of a one-man show. He did a lot of the stuff, pretty much all the stuff himself, as far as I know. Concerned Ape, I believe. And he really got to the core of what made Harvest Moon great in the old days. And here's the main things. Your farm is fun to farm on. It's fun to work in the environment. The grid is laid out very well. They don't use a goofy 3D engine where it's hard to see where you're planting what, when, and where. It's all very grid-based. It's all very much, you know, graphically very similar to the Super Nintendo version, although, of course, it can do quite a lot more than the Super Nintendo version can do, being a modern game. So, visually, it's got a very retro style, but it uses that not just for an aesthetic, but for also to make the core gameplay of growing crops easier. The grid is very easily defined, and if you turn on the option to show a little box of where you're about to do an action, you can see exactly what box you're going to water with your watering pail, or, you know, hoe with your hoe. And so this graphical effect gets back to what made the series great. And then you can, you know, upgrade your tools so that you can cover a wider area. But the interface is a lot easier to navigate as well. And then another great thing about it is that the sort of the inventory system, well, inventory systems in the Harvest Moon series has always been slightly clunky. And in Stardew Valley, it's also just slightly clunky the way you maneuver around in it. I guess if you were to actually be using a mouse, it would be a little bit easier, but on the Switch, it's more traditional, and that's fine. But what I found is that the progression level with the inventory system, how you open up new boxes, you know, buying more space in your bag. And also the way you progress the tools, finding the different ore you need to get like silver bars or copper bars or gold bars or whatever to upgrade your tools, really adds this good solid level of progression to it. And I think what a lot of the other games have lost is this continual trickle of little things to get you to keep coming back to it. It's a game that feeds the addictive nature of players. It teases little tiny advancements along the way. And the best way, the absolute best way that it does this is with its community center. Okay, so in Stardew Valley, you're in this little town. It's kind of run down. It always has been in every single game of this genre before. Your job is to make it better. And what they have is a community center. And this community center is a neat concept because it's a building that's kind of run down. These little sprite spirit things have, you know, taken over it. And in order to repair it, they ask you to bring them things. And it's items and things that you can get throughout the game. Sometimes it's a crop that you've got. Sometimes it's certain types of fish that you catch. Sometimes it's just plain money. Sometimes it's minerals. And so, as you're progressing the game, as you're going around exploring and growing and doing all the things that you need to be doing, you've also got this clearly defined set of goals that's opening up to you in the community center. And every time you achieve something, it unlocks something else for you to go after. So you start to see, okay, these are my goals. These are the things that I really need to focus on if I want to progress this game even more. And every little bit that you do in that community center opens up something slightly new. This is how the game keeps you focused. Now, there's also all the other things that you can do. You know, you can go into the mines and you can fight enemies. This is something that Rune Factory, kind of a spin-off of Harvest Moon, tried to do. And while it does it well, it focuses too much on the combat and too much on the dating sim elements and not enough on the farming aspects. Stardew Valley always has a good balance. You know, going into the mines and fighting monsters and collecting ores is part of your mining mechanic. It's also, you know, there's a combat mechanic, but you're not, you know, just fighting just for the fun of fighting. You're always working towards a goal. Maybe it's collecting enough, you know, monster, slime gels that you need, monster loots, you know, things like that. Maybe it's collecting the ores and the monsters are in the way. Maybe it's leveling up to a certain point so you can unlock a new recipe to build a new item. But there's just this really solidly balanced set of progressions and goals. Along with that, the dating sim elements are also very, very well tuned. And with that, what I say is, you know, there's events and festivals and things like there always is. But in the older games, I always noticed that planning for these seemed like a real chore. It was kind of like a, you know, oh, well, I have to take a day out of my time that I'm really, really busy to do this thing. And also I had to like figure out when it was going to be and plan for it and everything like that. This game is very clear. It has a calendar that tells you when the events are. It also tells you when each, you know, person in the town's birthday is. You can give everyone items, which is fairly standard for this type of game. But in this game, there are single people who, you know, you can actually date, and then not single people. And everyone can take items. You can give items to anyone, and they all have a friendship that you can boost. Now, the friendship is in your menu. It's very easy to see. You don't have to run to someone's bedroom and find out what their heart level is. You very clearly know who you can date and who you can't date, because it's right there in your menu. It says single, if they're dateable. And also, there is a very clear goal for making friends with everyone, not just the dateable people. Everyone that you date, when you unlock 2 hearts or 4 hearts or 6 hearts, these sort of milestones, you get a cutscene, and that adds, little things. And for the people that you can't date, it also still gives you stuff. For example, you might learn a new recipe once you get to 4 hearts with most of the villagers. And these are recipes that you use for, you know, cooking that you can't necessarily unlock other ways. So there's an incentive to be friends with everybody, not just that one person that you're going after. The other thing, which praise hallelujah that they actually did and did well, was same-sex options. So in this game, if you really want to have a same-sex marriage, you can do that. If you want to date a girl and you're a girl, you can do that. You can do whatever you want in this game. And what is really great about it is that, unlike a lot of other attempts at approaching this, they took their time to give each individual character their own approach to it. Now, for example, in my game, of course, I'm playing as female, and I'm playing with 2 characters that I'm trying to date right now, because frankly, I couldn't decide which one I liked better. And so I started on one path, got her up to the maximum hearts, gave her, you know, the bouquet that you need to be dating, but I haven't given her the item thing that you need yet to actually get engaged. And the reason is because there's another character named Leah who I was also interested in. And I thought, well, there's no penalty for dating 2 people in this game, so I can be kind of a Don Juan. Actually, for a side note, I named my character Heathcliff after the character from Charlotte Bronte's Wuthering Heights, because it's a tragic, you know, kind of an anti-hero, heartthrob kind of character, but it's a female. And I gave her kind of a slightly boyish haircut and an earring, so she looks kind of boyish and attractive and, you know, suave and cool and all that kind of thing. But maybe not. Anyway, what I discovered in the dating is that each character is a little bit different. And you would expect for a game where you can date anyone for it to just be kind of generic. You know, everyone's bisexual, you know, and the only thing that changes is their pronouns. Now, this is something that a lot of games do when they're approaching this whole same-sex marriage kind of thing. They just leave it very, very simple and open. It's up to you to interpret it. They don't do a lot of extra work. They don't actually build a whole lot into the characters. It's just, I am in love with you, and the is replace you. It's that pronoun swapping in the game code, name swapping in the game code, and let's just not focus too much on the actual gender. That's not what Stardew Valley does. Stardew Valley actually goes in and gives each character their own approach to their sexuality based on whichever gender you choose. So if you choose to be female, and this is a little bit of spoilers, so I probably should have said that ahead of time, but you've probably played this game more than I have at this point. Leah is going to be different than, say, Abigail. And what I mean by that is, Abigail, once you get to a certain point, she kind of tells you that she's never, you know, been interested in a woman before she met you. But she's never really, quite really, you know, liked guys. So she never really understood what that feeling was. But now that, you know, Heathcliff is here to woo her off of her feet, she understands it now. It's her first time, you know, small town life, you know, making friends, but never feeling quite right with them. But now that, you know, I've come to town, I'm the love of her life, and she knows it now. She knows what she wants. Blah, blah, blah. It sounds cliche, of course, but that's the fun of it, right? So, okay, so maybe all of the girls are like that. Oh, you know, I've never been with another girl, but now that I've met you... No, that's not what they decided to do. Leah is completely different. If you decide to pursue Leah's love interest, what you find is that her character is actually lesbian, if you're female. Now, if you're not female, if you chose to be male, her character is straight. And she has an X, and the X is either male or female, depending on whether you are male or female. If you choose to be female, her X is female, and the game goes and changes the gender and pronoun and even the character sprite for that X, so that you can actually see that it's a female ex-girlfriend. And then Leah has some dialogue that's slightly different that talks about, oh, you're like me. You know, oh, you're interested in girls too. Which you don't have if you choose male. And so the idea that not every character is bisexual, even though every character is available to all genders, is something that takes and just says, well, it's not that difficult to actually program this, but it just takes a little bit of extra planning and forethought. And it's something that a lot of people don't do when approaching this topic. They either go simple and just make it generic and, you know, insert pronoun and name here, or they don't bother at all. And Stardew Valley shows that it's not very difficult to integrate this kind of thing into a game and make it feel good, make it feel plausible. I mean, because obviously it's not plausible that every person in your town is going to be, you know, bisexual or lesbian or whatever, gay if you're choosing to be a male character. That's just not that plausible. But the way they made it so that the characters themselves can change based on what gender you chose and then have their own plot points based on that, on top of it, their own sexuality and so on, is unique. And while it doesn't give like a solid sort of foundation for each character, because, you know, there's no like canon version of Leah. Leah is not canon lesbian any more than she's canon straight. It depends on you. And so, if you're looking for that canon, you know, sexuality for that character, you're not going to get that. Because she's not one way or the other. It depends on you. So, it has its good points and bad points, but at the same time, the fact that it's all plausible, even though it's not, you know, even though every character is bisexual or lesbian, which, you know, if you play female, or gay or bisexual if you play male, that's not plausible. The fact that they made it sort of plausible, or at least fit within a story instead of just being, hey, fantasy world, is the extra step that's needed. And I'll tell you why. Harvest Moon has never done this. Harvest Moon has never given you the option, and it's, you know, side story of seasons, which, by the way, if you're wondering, I'm going to take a moment out here. If you're wondering what the deal is with Story of Seasons or Harvest Moon, Harvest Moon is owned by a company in Japan called Marvelous, and it's called Bokujo Monogatari in Japanese, as I said. And the company that brought it to America was Natsume. And then somewhere along the line, a few years back, there was sort of a break in that, and so Marvelous went with this company Exceed to continue doing the American versions of the game. And when they did that, Natsume kind of turned out they actually owned the name Harvest Moon. So the game is now being developed in Japan by the same company as always. The game is still Bokujo Monogatari in Japan, but in America they had to change the name because now that Exceed's doing it, they no longer have the name Harvest Moon, even though it's the actual real game's Harvest Moon. So they changed it to Story of Seasons. Meanwhile, Natsume is making their own game in America, based on this concept, called Harvest Moon, but it's not actually Harvest Moon, because they're not Harvest Moon games made by the Japanese company that makes Harvest Moon games, or Bokujo Monogatari games. So that's kind of confusing, but whatever. So anyway, Story of Seasons / Harvest Moon has never given you this option to be same-sex. You know, to have same-sex, you know, homosexuality or bisexuality or whatever. And there's a whole lot of reasons why, but one of the major reasons is the difference in the way that Japanese people and American people look at anything LGBT. And we'll just, you know, we'll limit it to heterosexuality for the purposes of this discussion, just to, you know, clarify and make it easier for discussion. But basically, in Japan, the view of homosexuality is that it's not really real. And this is mainly because of media and some historical things and the way homosexuality has just been portrayed culturally. But it's always been viewed as this sort of fantasy thing. You know, it's a fantasy that you'd get in a novel or a manga. You know, it's these beautiful boys having this beautiful, crazy, hot relationship, or, you know, it's this all-girls school with flowery dresses and girls that just fall in love with each other at the drop of a hat. And it's all very over-the-top fantasy image. And then in the media also, you know, there's most of the variety shows on TV have a homosexual character who may or may not be homosexual. They may be heterosexual, but it's sort of a trope character. They're the token homosexual character. They usually cross-dress, and they're there for comic relief. And it's something that came from an earlier form of Japanese, you know, theater that's kind of progressed into modern times. But basically, there's still this sort of gag homosexual character that's there for comic relief. And so we as LGBT people are viewed as not really real. Like, everyone understands that there are real LGBT people, but that's not culturally how we're viewed. We're viewed as a fetish or a fantasy. And so when you approach a game like this, you're going to want to do whatever, you know, appeals to the mass market. And so in Japan, the thinking is the mass market is all heterosexual because everyone's heterosexual. There's not really homosexual people. That's a fantasy. In America, it's different, of course. America, we think, well, okay, there are LGBT people out there. We don't like it, but that's how it is. And there's a lot of fighting that goes on back and forth, and a lot of, you know, well, you, we think blah, 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 we think blah, 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 and, you know, well, this and them and blah, blah, blah. And so for a long, long, long time in America, it was not popular to promote anything towards LGBT people because it was viewed as something that would get you a big backlash. You know, if you created a gay character in a TV show, there would be enough public outcry, how dare you, that it would, you know, it would kill the series. And the same thing would be true for games. So for a long, long time, you couldn't put same-sex marriage in a game like this because if you did, you'd have boycotts and not really riots, but, you know, you'd have at least financial violence. Let's put it that way. Now, the times have changed, and now there's a big demand for LGBT characters and options, same-sex, you know, options in games. And so that aspect is different from Japan because in Japan, there's never been that sort of violence. There's never been that sort of anger, but there's also never been that mass market appeal. LGBT people generally are just not as vocal here. They're viewed as a sort of silent minority that doesn't really have a lot of power. And at the same time, they're also viewed as just a joke, a fantasy, a fiction. And so why would the developer spend any extra time or money to cater to an audience that they don't think exists? And that's the logic that goes on behind games like Harvest Moon or Story of Seasons in Japan. And that doesn't translate to America well, because now the times have shifted in America and the public opinion has shifted, and there's enough of us out there in America that want to play a game where we can date a person of the same sex. And there's actually plenty of heterosexual people that want that option too, whether it's for their own, you know, weird fetish thing, or it's just because they don't like the idea of being a part of the game and the part of the romance themselves. They want it to be, you know, their own ways, cute and fun. Oh, I love boys love, oh, you know, whatever it is. And that's fine. I'm not judging on it, but it's just, it's different. And so in Japan, that hasn't caught on yet. And when you take a game like Harvest Moon, Story of Seasons, Bokujo Monogatari, whatever you want to call it, and you then translate that to the U.S., you have this gap. And that gap is between what the developer's image is and what the reality is on the street in America. And that gap is a really difficult thing for the company who's translating it, because they don't know what to do. You know, they know that demand is out there, but if the Japanese side's not going to do it, what can they do? So it's this really weird give and take sort of thing that's all wrapped up in Japanese culture. And Stardew Valley doesn't have to deal with any of it, because Stardew Valley starts out being made in America and then moves to Japan. And so Yes, there's same-sex dating options in Stardew Valley. And yes, the game is in Japan, in Japanese. Are there people in Japan who are actually playing the same-sex options? Who knows? Probably? Maybe? I don't know. But the point is, it's there, and it's not hurting it. Because it's being made with the American viewpoint first, and then the Japanese viewpoint second, instead of the Japanese viewpoint first and the American viewpoint second. And that's two things that this developer has right. It's a focus on reality, in terms of same-sex marriage, and a focus on what the core gameplay was that brought fans, both Japanese and American, to this game in the first place. Not what the Japanese super crazy otaku moe moe, I want to love all the lovey lovey girls, blah, 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 crazy otaku person, sorry if you're one of those, is after. It's not mass market nonsense. It's core gameplay. It's not fluff and frills. It's, I want to grow a farm. And that's great. And that's why I love Stardew Valley.